It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Hour two, live at Mandalay Bay. We're on in Northern Nevada, Reno. It's all presented by Battleborne Injury Lawyer. 766-1400 is the number. You got to dial 775 in the north. Griffin is back in our Findlay Toyota studios. So is Alex White, the best female handicapper better in the world, in the country, in the universe. We'll get into more contesting information because she's our link to all of this because she's going to be in a lot of these contests. So, Alex, give me your general thoughts on the Big Ten choosing Las Vegas to do their football media days.
I don't know. Why not? I think it makes sense for – we saw the Big 12 here last year, Big 10 here. Mountain West has been up at Circa now for a few years, so it makes sense, right? Plenty of places to stay, nice convention centers.
While I will sit here as Chamber of Commerce Cofield and pitch Vegas for everything, anytime, any year, any season, this one's a little bit weird. One, the Mountain West has natural tie-ins with UNLV as one of the schools, and we already have championships here. The Big 12, I thought, was kind of interesting. Proximity-wise, the Big 12 is closer. Now you've got schools like Arizona and Arizona State right down the road. This one's a little bit weird because I can tell you on day one, and what they're doing are they're doing blocks of six schools at a time. Day one, my view is it was lightly attended.
Oh.
Which, listen, it's 2025. I think they made it somewhat affordable for people to come here. Like, from what I heard, the room rates at Mandalay were, you know, very much manageable. But in this media era where everyone's not breaking the bank with a budget, not every Tom, Dick, and Harry, and I don't want to rip flyover states or, you know, schools in the Big Ten, but I will. You know, not every podunk radio station in a lot of these places has the budget to come out to Vegas for 2 or 3 days. So I love the idea. I think it's money well spent by the LVCVA because it's going to beam in, you know, all these images or beam out all these images of Big Ten bigwigs, players, coaches. Hey, they're in Vegas, lots of Vegas images. That's good. I'm not sure that the functionality of the event was exactly beneficial to a lot of people who cover the Big Ten. And in the end, that's why you're doing media days, I think, right? Right. Or is it maybe it's only for one media. It's just for TV.
Where would you suggest?
Well, in the past it's been in Indy.
Yeah.
But apparently they had some logistic issues in holding it in Indianapolis. Talking to some other people, you know, for years they also rotated. They did it in Chicago a lot. And, well, they've kind of turned their back on Chicago. Can you give me the Petiti cut here as you talked about the future of Vegas and tie-ins with the Big Ten? He was pretty matter-of-fact as to why they're here. It wasn't like some glowing report, I didn't think, of Las Vegas and why the commish had the media days here in Sin City.
I mean, to be really candid, this was a logistics thing. There were some things going on in Indianapolis. You know, we've tried to and have brought our media days to Indy, and it's worked really well for us. There just wasn't possible this year, and then we had to make some decisions about where to go. We're bringing our men's and women's basketball tournaments here in the next couple of years, so it made sense. And the city's been great in terms of, you know, providing us the resources we need to do this. I think, obviously, you know, we are a conference that goes coast to coast, so having some presence closer to our West Coast members is not a bad thing. So it was really just started with logistics, to be really candid.
Thanks, Tony. So a lot of that was Indy wasn't available, and he didn't say it, but LVCVA paid us, so why not try it here? I mean, I think you could have made a bigger point of, like, we added two LA schools in Oregon and Washington, like, every 10 years. Maybe we can put it actually within hailing distance of where they are, but he didn't exactly say that one. So I was kind of waiting for him to be like, I don't know why we're here. I don't want to be here. Like, all right, Tone, there you go. He didn't sugarcoat it, which was kind of his approach. He had an opening statement, and he took about 12, 13 questions. Before we get into his philosophy on what the college football playoff should look like if it goes to 14 or 16 teams, we've been discussing a 4-auto bid for the Big Ten, for auto bid for the SEC, and then on from there with some auto slots, much less, for Big 12 and ACC, and then at-large spots. Or five champions are in, 11 open spots. What do you favor? What do you think is the better idea? What's going to make a better playoff? Four plus four or 5 and 11?
Ooh. So five total between the two?
No, five. It would be no. It would just be champions. Five champions.
Five champions.
And then 11 open spots. It could be SEC. I mean, imagine if there were actually two group of five schools invited in those 11.
Yes.
So it's basically, hey, your champ makes it, and then it's wide open, or you get four schools in automatically from both the SEC and the Big Ten. So half the field is SEC and Big Ten, guaranteed every year out of 16.
No, I don't think that – well, it doesn't matter what I think, but I do like the
well,
five.
Well, it does. No, I'm asking you.
I like the five and the 11 because, yeah. I mean, they can get four in, right? But if it's a down year for one of them, which we'll see, but I think that's a better – that's what we've been discussing.
Well, so here's the grand plan. If they do the 4 plus 4, they're going to do play-ins.
To more games.
So the play-ins would be there is a title game in the SEC and Big Ten. There is a 3-6 matchup and a 4-5 matchup. And those matchups will determine slots. And then say the 3 loses against the 6, the 3 would still be a candidate to get an at-large, which could mean the SEC could get 5 or, hell, 6. But what we'd also have is you could have a sixth-place team that had a good conference record, maybe didn't do that well non-con, could be sitting at like 8-5 as the sixth seed, but they won their play-in game, so they're in. And I like the idea of a play-in, but I don't think we have enough adults in the media and especially in amongst the fans where they could deal with a six like that only is sitting at 8-5.
Yeah. So what?
So there's some challenges there.
Yeah, what would work for the play-in?
The 4 plus 4 is the play-in scenario.
I will say I'm interested to see when it comes to like conference play for these conferences. Last year we saw a lot of these teams and schools we were upset about, you know, a conference game, especially when you look at a team like Notre Dame who has no conference, who didn't have to play in a conference game. They all saw that as a way that it affected their ability to enter into the CFP. So, I mean, system regardless, I think it's a matter of, you know, these later games in the season, how they affect these teams and their ability wherever they're at standing wise. I'm more interested to see how important conference championship games will be and whether they'll impact teams or not.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be that important. I mean, the auto bids are not, they're not going to be that important. I want to bring in one of the folks from the Big Ten. He's in charge of the biz side of things. AJ's up. AJ Eads is here with us, a former Iowa player. There's a lot to get into. First of all, welcome to the show.
Yeah,
so
thank
Steve
you.
Cofield, Alexandra White is back in the studios. First of all, why are you guys here? I was just talking about I heard Tony Petitti say it, and like it wasn't the most enthusiastic thing. He's like, yeah, logistically, I'm like, all right, well, this is good for the Big Ten, right?
Oh, it's
in
great.
In terms of the exposure?
Yeah, this is great. So thanks for having me on. Yeah. We're happy to be here. We're thrilled to be here. Our coaches, players are enthusiastic, have been. I think we heard Coach Bielema in some of his remarks allude to that. So definitely a little different for us historically where we've been, but we'll be playing basketball out here the next couple of years. CFP is going to be playing out here. Hopefully we have a chance to be a part of that. So it made a lot of sense for us on a relatively short runway to be able to intentionally and purposely spend some time out here in Las Vegas and bring this event to town. But as Tony alluded to, there were some scheduling challenges, and that's not the sole reason. It's not as if this was the only option that was available to us and we started drawing names out
sure.
of hats.
So, I guess we'll go to Vegas.
Right, we did. We spent time on it, and we asked our folks, we asked our coaches, we asked our administrators. So it was not a decision necessarily made in a vacuum, but knowing that we were going to be spending time out here the next couple of years, other events that we hope to be a part of, it made sense to come out for the better part of the week and be able to host our programs out here.
I think basketball is a great idea. The tournaments,
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to kill it because yeah. you know it'll be a lot of advance notice. I think fans will want to come here.
Yeah,
and then all these venues we have.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely
it's designed nicely.
That time of year, the weather pretty strong to very strong, based on where we've played our tournament over the last handful of years, upper mid. East Coast. It'll be a little bit of a different opportunity for fan bases to come, and whether it's tying a little bit of a spring break trip into it or just coming out to support the team or take in the city, the shows, the lights, whatever the case may be. You're exactly right. Good time of year, good opportunity to engage a little bit differently than we've been able to in the past, and really give our schools and our programs the opportunity to create that forum to reach their donors, their alumni, their fan bases in a unique and different way and meet them where they are. So anytime we can do all that and weave it into one, that's usually a good undertaking for us.
Your official title is?
I'm the Vice President of Football Operations for the Big Ten.
Okay. So, again, in the press conference, the commissioner was asked about global.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which I actually, because we're so, you know, outside of the footprint, we're kind of in the middle, obviously with the four former Pac-12 schools in there. I think we're part of like a global expansion, a plan.
Mm-hmm.
What is in the offing to try to like? Because I think sometimes we get locked in, like, hey, this is kind of the market, this is it for college football, but it's football.
Mm-hmm.
So like, how big can you guys get? What sort of creative ideas can you guys do to bring in more and more and more money?
Yeah, you know, that's a question that I think revenue generation is out there just generally speaking. It's not a new concept. It's an idea or a consideration that probably a little bit more recently has been at the forefront of how decisions are being considered. It's still not the sole driver of decisions for us as a league. We have various direction, various charters, various encouragement, recommendations that really are at the forefront of how we do undertake various decisions. Revenue generation is in there, but it's not the sole thing that we get up and think about Monday through Friday for as many hours as we're awake. So it's a piece, and every situation is unique. Every situation is different. There's no one formula or algorithm that we throw into the blender and hope for a result. But that said, it is important. And if we can maximize other components, and if revenue generation comes along with it, that's all the better. But there's no one way to skin that cat. But there are considerations out there. I'd say as far as our membership, we are very content with where we're at. The programs that are part of the Big Ten that make all the sense for all the obvious reasons that are in the Big Ten, the footprint that we currently find ourselves in from coast to coast, 3 out of 4 time zones, you know, pretty consistent and pretty steady exposure on typical Saturdays and in the fall when you look at East Coast all the way to the West Coast. So we got our hands full plenty with 18. We're not necessarily looking to take 18 to anything beyond. But that said, it's you got to be an opportunist whenever stuff's out there. But we're focused on the 18 we have. It's the right group for us. And I think we saw last year that we've got the right pieces in place to be as competitive as anybody out there.
I got like 30 seconds left in this block. If you can give me 5 more minutes, I'd love to bring you in.
Oh, yeah.
John's going to come in.
I'll be a great opening act for your next guest.
Really quick on this one, and again, about 30 seconds. Football operations, part of operations is making sure these teams can get to where they need to get
to. That's right.
Year one, how was it with all the travel? Again, about 30 seconds.
Yeah, quickly. I think it was really well embraced. I think it doesn't take a genius to have to look at the map and realize that some trips are longer than others. But that was for all 18 of our members. Our schools coming west, the schools in the western footprint coming east, and everybody in between. So all in all, went well. Bunch of CFP success, national championships, so we'll mark it up as a win.
I got a few seconds. What can you do better?
Win again?
Well, I meant in the terms of the travel. Because not everyone's always happy. They were talking about
where
they could land at what airport. And you know what? Hold it. We're up against
We'll come back after break.
Yeah. He's in at the break. He's from the Big Ten. Is with us, former Hawkeye, and played in the NFL for a while. Sorry you had to play for the Jets. My bad.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Towards the halfway point of Cofield and Company here at Mandalay Bay, Big Ten football media days. Still sounds weird, but I'm glad you guys are here, and I love talking football. So football season is here. By the way, John, your buddy opens up his practices. Well, multiple buddies opens up their practices tomorrow. UNLV football opens tomorrow because of the now week zero game.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to head out there and see what. I'm glad he was thinking about doing nighttime practices. I'm glad we were able to talk him into the morning practices.
I didn't know that
before it gets too hot. And so I'll head out there for a little bit tomorrow before it gets a little warm. See what's going on. I'll have no idea what's going on. If you've ever been to a, if you've ever been to practice and you have 37, as you know, 37 coaches yelling 37 things at people, it's hard to follow along. But we'll go out there for a few.
So we were talking about the business of the Big Ten and the football operations, and I got a chance to sit down earlier with Jeremiah Smith. Listen, you play in the NFL. You're a big guy. You can tell you played. That kid, you want to talk about impressive. I was paying him a compliment. I'm like, college football is really gigantic, and you can stay focused. But, man, there aren't that many guys you look at and you're like, hey, they're ready.
Yeah.
He's got the size already.
Yeah, I think you look at the guys at the next level that are having success, and, Jeremiah, amongst other guys in our league, but especially Jeremiah, seems to, have a lot of the physical traits it's going to take. And for guys like that, how much can you differentiate yourself with how much other intangibles you can create? I think we heard Coach Day talk about that and the other guys that they had this trip. They've got a heck of a team. And, the part that it sounds a little bit cliche, but there's not a lot of Jeremiah Smiths necessarily, but there's a lot of players in this league that will be day one picks, day two picks, and play for 8, 10, 12, 15 years in the NFL on a reoccurring basis every year. And it's a privilege to be a part of it, to be able to give these young men and their coaching staffs and the administrators the tools that they need to go out, put their best foot forward individually, collectively, which is a league, it speaks for itself, and the success kind of, gets out there, and we don't have to do a whole lot to pound the drum. It's out there and visible, and it's not hard to find on Saturdays.
I think this is going to be a tremendous era for however long these rules last, let's just say 5-7 years. I love RevShare. I love NIL. I think it gives schools that maybe were afraid to spend money in other ways in the past, now they can kind of compete and buy themselves to the table. It was interesting from the commish, from Tony Petitti, when asked about managing the split of the revenue.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, I think, probably can give some advice, but in the end, every state's different, every university's different. That's going to be something to deal with, especially, if programs have to be cut, there's female sports to be concerned with. And while football is going to get the lion's share of the money, it still has to be distributed in somewhat of a fair way.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head that it's going to be an institutional decision across the board. For all 18 programs, they're going to have to identify the path that makes the most sense for them. They'll all have their own unique potential challenges, but nuances certainly. And there's going to be ebbs and flows. What might be the plan of business in year one may not be the exact same in year two and so on. And I think one of the things people are most excited about is learning as quickly as they can, within reason, how best to maximize the opportunities and how best to identify what opportunities are out there and then go after it and be able to identify it and pursue it. So you're exactly right. It's going to be a little bit different. We aren't necessarily in a position to create that direction. It's not necessarily the chair that we sit in, and so we can do a lot of things to help and advise and be a resource in the process, but that'll be 18 decisions locally across campuses.
AJ Eads with us from the Big Ten. John Cesenti, Las Vegas Bowl. John, I'm going to bring you in here with some fascinating stuff. We never get to talk, but I have more for you. But
No, I could just sit here and watch AJ talk all day long. This is great. Usually I only get him on the phone and he's traveling, and now I get to see him in action in person. This is a nice treat.
I want to lean on your football knowledge, the fact that you played at Iowa, the fact that you played in the NFL, and point out to people that while we talk about money all the time and the money is going to be discussed, I don't think it's the end-all, be-all in putting together rosters.
Right,
because I still think it's really important that coaches can judge personnel, and that's why I kind of grow tired of the – and I understand the position and the constant drive to raise funds, but these guys know they can put together good football teams, even if they don't have all the money of, say, the top two teams in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. You still need talent. You better develop the talent, and you need coaches that can coach the guys up. And you better have a great strength and conditioning program. You better have a great training room. You better have a great academic program, because all of those things in the college game are critical to success. You got to take guys from where they are and advance them forward. You better keep them healthy in that progress or that process. Academic progress in our league is a core focus of what we do and the charter, why we exist. And so we don't have a lack of resources in any of those areas collectively across our campuses, and our folks know that. And so it's talent certainly is critical, but hard work and development and health and safety all has a key piece into what could be a 17-game run at the end of the season. So there's a lot there, but you know, talent also is a big part of success.
John, are you comfortable if we keep talking academics, or is that going to bother you?
Yeah. Everybody in Vegas that's listening knows I went to the Harvard of the West and graduated with a solid 2.9.
Graduate.
Yeah. From the Harvard of the West, UNLV.
Yes.
The school is on the move. While you're being sarcastic, they have made big strides. And I do think they've done a really good job. You should be proud as an alum. They've done a really good job of developing the academic support system.
Yeah, listen, UNLV's come a long way from when I was there. I came out here to be an architect. I thought I was going to build hotels and casinos and realized you had to be actually smart and go to class and be good at that. So thank God I had some academic advisors that showed me the slightly easier path.
You're good in restaurants and bars and schmoozing. Yeah, you're good in the casino. Yeah, you don't have to build it.
Yeah. Well, I definitely was not building one.
No.
But it's worked out. It's worked out okay.
On the academic side, I get a kick out of the fact that one of the positives, we didn't want to go through COVID, but the fact that kids can stay in school longer. I also think NIL is going to help that. RevShare is going to help that. That kids don't have to run right. If their families need money, they're going to make money. Mm-hmm. The more degrees and the more experience educationally, that's awesome.
Yeah, education is never a bad thing, no matter where it's from, whatever level it is, whatever acumen it's maybe pursuing, especially in the Big Ten. Any degree or progress to degree is a good one. We like seeing the young folks complete those degrees and leave with the time they've put in. Not everyone does, but we like to hopefully get them in a place where they can do that. And you're right, to be able to go back and get as much as they can, that's a big deal. To be able to play sports at a championship level and pursue world-class educational opportunities simultaneous and be supported at a championship level on both fronts, it's unique. It's not something that just happens. It takes diligence, it takes time, it's tradition, and it's intentional, which, again, it's truly a privilege to be a part of that on a daily basis in the chair that I get to sit in.
Would you like me to open negotiations here for the future of the Las Vegas Bowl and that Big Ten tie-in?
Yeah, why don't you just take care of the whole thing? I mean, give me a little bit of a break. I mean, I'll say that the Big Ten is an absolute joy to work with. We've had such a great partnership. I've told AJ this a bunch of times. The most professional group of people communicate so well. They in my 20 plus years doing this, they have been some of the greatest people to work with throughout the process. And listen, we joke around about this all the time, like, who are we going to have this year, right? And AJ is very, very open and honest, and he goes through where teams have been the last couple years and where teams are projected to finish, and we hone in on, you know, those four or five that we think are going to be sitting in that window, right? And it gives me an opportunity to track those, and, you know, sometimes it works out great. I think year one, we joked around in August about who we'd have, and then we ended up having that team in Wisconsin, and we never thought we'd actually have the team that we joked around wanting to have in that first year. And so, listen, being a part of such a traditional big time conference is great for Las Vegas. It's great for our bowl game. You know, I think we're, correct me if I'm wrong here, Age, but we're the only pre-scheduled Big Ten Pac-12
that's right.
game this year. So
that's right.
We are the little Rose Bowl, if you will. We're striving to be the Rose Bowl, and so now, since we're the only scheduled one, we can be the poor man's Rose Bowl this year. And I look at this conference top to bottom, and they are loaded. They have some good teams. There's some teams that you know we're just not going to get our hands on that are going to be too good. But I feel pretty confident in where we're picking this year and what we're going to have, and we're going to have another good Big Ten team come to Vegas. And listen, now is the year I think we're going to show the power of our city and the power of this partnered with. We're on December 31st, right? We're on that key date. We're at 12:30 Pacific, 3:30 Eastern. We could not have asked for a better date, a better time, and a better partner for this last year of the cycle.
I got a minute left. If you want to speak to what John does here for the Las Vegas Bowl, we're pitching it all the time, but all bowl games are not created equal.
That's right.
What they do here is pretty high level.
Yeah, John and his team do an excellent job. And all joking aside, you know, obviously we have some opportunities to have a lot of fun with it, but this operation, the Las Vegas Bowl, John and his team, it is a focus from the first day after the game up until kickoff the following year. We're in constant deliberation. I think it's easy to think the Las Vegas Bowl is just one game. There are outreaches and engagements in the community throughout the course of the year that are hugely impactful and powerful to drum up support and interest and a following in a build-up and a ramp-up to that game to play in Allegiant in what is arguably the best stadium, one of the best stadiums in the league, to be able to send our fan base to a world-class community here where you can spend an hour, a week, a month, whatever it is, and probably be able to fill your time pretty adequately top to bottom and watch a football team hopefully go out and win a championship is, again, something that's important, intentional, deliberate for us. And it's a pleasure to work with John, his team that he puts together, and be able to roll out the red carpet and put on a first-class event year after year.
I got to say, I didn't expect – I thought you were going to go Stephen A. Smith here and try to spark some debate here where we'd go back and forth and we start yelling at each other. Now all of a sudden we're like, no, you're great. No, you're great. No, you're great. Like, I'm sure your listeners are like driving along going, well, this is a blast. You guys are being nice to each other.
They have very important meetings coming up. We're going to let you go to those meetings. Meeting, yeah. So enjoy yourself. Thank you so much, AJ, for the time, John.
Thank you. That's all you do.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
While we're getting ready for the football season, Big Ten Football Media Days, day one here at Mandalay Bay, you know this show is always going to hit on something WNBA, more importantly, Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese related. Alex White is with us. So they're coming out of the break. Aces are playing today. Alex, where would you like to start first? The All-Star Game viewership or the story that blew up, which was Kelsey Plum appearing to badmouth Caitlin Clark?
I would like to start there because I am glad that I listened to Cofield and Company and heard you and Willie talking about it yesterday because I had no idea where that joke had come from with Kelsey Plum and kind of teasing the team about not showing up because they were hungover, not because they didn't want to be there. So,
and 99.9% of the internet still has no idea. And if they do, they don't care because that's not going to go viral.
Right.
Kelsey Plum is, she may be as big an enemy to the Caitlin Clark world as Angel Reese now.
Ooh.
Like, it has gone so viral, and every moron, especially male content creator, has jumped on this thing just to annihilate Kelsey Plum. But here's the thing. It was a poorly told joke, and the worst part, the timing of it, not the right time.
No. No, not the right time at all. When they're asking the serious questions and, you know, them all being unified, and then that joke did not fit there, and like you said, 99% of people had no idea what that inside joke was about.
Yep. Hey, Griffin, do you have a Plum t-shirt too? Bite, if we can locate that one, because I want the audience that didn't hear, haven't seen it, especially if it's not cut correctly. I don't think they understand what Kelsey Plum was saying when she was talking about the t-shirts, pay us what you owe us, and the crowd reacting, and then she tried to break it up and said, well, I was just trying to lighten things up, but no one got what was going on there. Can we fire this?
Not to tattletale, but zero members of Team Clark were very present for that. But no, we were just, we had a very...
that really needed to be mentioned.
I'm trying to make a situation light, okay?
Yeah, so that was, what she was talking about was a meeting in the morning, which I also thought was what a stupid thing to even, the way they executed it. Like, oh, we came up with these t-shirts in the morning and they told us about it the day of the game. I'm like, that's like weeks out. That's how important all of these images are. You have to manage this correctly. It's a freaking labor dispute. Most people out there hate athletes. They don't want athletes to get any fair shake. And then you're telling this dumb joke about apparently they were, you know, whooping it up the night before. And Team Clark was a reference not to Caitlin Clark and her agents or her handlers. It was the actual squad in the WNBA All-Star game. And apparently, well, they didn't show up for the early morning meeting because they were still fired up from the night before.
Well, and with that being said, and kind of poorly planned, like you mentioned, that's kind of what happened with the wording on the shirts, right? Because a lot of people are turned off with the way that it is worded, and I think they could have done a much better job with that as well.
You hated that?
I did.
Pay us what you owe us?
Yeah, I did hate that.
You understand why that phrase is it's so poor in this situation. Because immediately people on the internet, some mainstream media people are like, what they owe you, technically you would owe them. The league has lost money for 30 years. Did you find someone who came up with a phrase that probably should have been on the T-shirt?
Yes, I did.
Okay. How did it read? That was what, Danielle McCartan, our friend in New York?
Yes, it was. She did a little quick video. I saw it on X, and she said wording could have been better if you put pay us what we're worth.
Right.
So I...
Or pay us our share of what you're making.
Yes.
That's even more like you're now making money, and you're going to make money in the future. But what you owe us, like they don't really owe you much. Because the recent growth has been, you know, the last 5 years, but especially the last two, it's just, again, you can't feed material like this, easy stuff to get bashed on in a labor dispute when most people around the country aren't doing that well economically, and they look at athletes and are like, how spoiled are you? They're automatically going to, I can't explain it. I don't know why fans side with billionaires and multimillionaires, but they're never or rarely on the side of the athlete.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Really just getting started here at Big Ten Football Media Days, day number one, Mandalay Bay. We opened the show talking to Jeremiah Smith from Ohio State, arguably the best player in the country. Now, we know the Heisman is a different sort of challenge. You can be the best, but if you're not at the right position, it gets a little more difficult. Latest odds on William Hill. Arch Manning 5-1. Garrett Nussmeier 750. Cade Klubnik 8. Jeremiah Smith is 10. Wow. Dante Moore 16. Drew Aller 16. Lenore Sellers 16. Let's bring in our buddy from Bet Sweats as Alexander White is with us. I don't have to do that for Sammy. I always have to do it for everyone else just in case you're like, hey, guys. Sammy P is with us from Bet Sweats. What's up, Sammy?
Man, I am torn up today about Ozzie kicking the bucket, man. That was like 16, 17-year-old Sam rolling around Chicago in his car.
Well, it's also, you know, kind of devastating because while he didn't look great, he gutted out, to use a sports term, he gutted out that concert a couple weeks ago, and you're like, okay, well, you know, now he's retired. Hopefully he can get some length to his life, and then, you know, we find out morning our time that Ozzie is gone. Yeah, that sucks. It sucks big time.
I think if you would have told me 25 years ago that he would make it to his late 70s, I'd say no way.
Yes.
I guess that's one way to look at it. But, man, there was nothing better than driving around with the windows down. Your buddies are all smoking cigarettes and Ozzy's blasting out of the speakers.
Were you smoking a cigarette, singing Crazy Train? Were you that kind of guy?
Yeah, we all did. We all did back in the day. Come on.
I was pure as a driven snow. Never smoked. No
boring
reaction. I know. Totally. Watching the Heisman odds, and we just talked to Jeremiah Smith. He's my choice because he gave me an interview. That's how easy I am. What's the market right now? How is the market reacting to, in this case, William Hill is 101 names up for the Heisman?
Well, the big story is Manning, and you don't even have to say his first name. You just say his last name, and that basically explains everything. The kid has never really played a really tough game, especially on the road, but the power of the name is everything. And, you know, the comparisons are already being drawn to his uncles, Peyton and Eli, only he's got wheels and he can run. So he's Peyton or Eli with wheels. And, you know, they're putting him up on this pedestal and this platter and everybody's betting him. So I remember in the summer, there were a couple books in Vegas that were like in that 8-9-1 range. And then somebody came in there and just decked them. And now you're seeing 5-6-1, which I would never bet. Let me start by saying that. I think he has a lot to prove. And I really do think there's a possibility where Texas goes into Ohio State week one and struggles. You know, that Ohio State team always breeds NFL players. I'm high on Texas, but it's also Steve Sarkisian, who's never really been great in these big games. So if anything, what I would do with Arch is, I don't want to say hope that he struggles, but if he does, man, I'd bet 10-1, 11-1 if he throws a couple of picks and Ohio State wins 31-10. That's not a bad idea. I certainly wouldn't bet the favorite. In fact, there's only been one favorite in the last 11 years coming into a season that's actually won the Heisman Trophy.
Sammy, you made a good bet today. I approve, but I want you to sell me on it even more. Former Georgia quarterback goes to Miami in Carson Beck, of course, coming off of an injury, but we know he has the college experience. You found a great number, 37-1?
Yeah, it was a silly number, Alex, to your point, and it's no longer available, wink, wink, so that tells me everything I need to know. I mean, some of the books are in that 18 to 20 range, and then there's a lot of 25 to 1, and there was a stale 37. It was very difficult to get that down because I live in Massachusetts, and this is not a state where you can bet on the Heisman, not to mention most places don't let you bet a lot on that market. But yeah, 37 to 1. It's down to 30 at that book, but I really think that if you look at the Georgia offense and the Miami offense, like Georgia obviously is a better program, has more NFL players, and has a better coach, but the talent around Miami is so good offensively, and the schematics mostly. Look at what Cam Ward did last year. I mean, they turned him into the number one pick in the draft in that offense. It's a fun-and-gun style in the shotgun. You take the snap, get the ball out quickly. Miami's got two first-run NFL offensive linemen, and the skill and the speed is always there. Mario's an outstanding recruiter, their head coach. I mean, he brought players everywhere, brought him to Oregon. Now he's got him at Miami. And I just think you look at how that season starts, Notre Dame, week number one, and if he can do his thing and throw a couple touchdown passes or three touchdown passes against the national runners-up in week one, what's the price then? Right? From 30 to what? From 25 to what? So it's a bet I'm going to have a pretty good feel on early, whether it's a good one or a bad one. Now, if he throws four picks, it's probably, I don't want to say dead, but it's probably not going to win. But I think in this system, with the style and the skill around him, he's going to put up big numbers. And you look at some of the quarterbacks Mario Cristobal has had. He's put Justin Herbert in the top 10. He's put Cam Ward number one. Quarterbacks thrive in this system, and that's basically what the bet was made on.
Sammy P is with us here on Cofield & Company. You talk to a lot of people, and I respect your opinion as well. Have you heard some names that were, you know, really deep long shots? We're talking 40, 50, 60, 70 to 1 that are intriguing. I mean, most of them are going to be quarterbacks, and assume if someone has one of those seasons where they're posting maybe an unbeaten season or one loss, that quarterback could be in the mix.
The one name that I heard from somebody about 2 weeks ago that I hadn't heard was Kansas State quarterback Avery Johnson. That's a name I just don't hear. You know, you hear a lot about Nussmeier and Manning, and Lenora Sellers is a big trendy name. John Mateer at Oklahoma. You hear these names. But there was a 66 to 1 on Avery Johnson. I didn't even bet it. I wish I did. It moved from like 66 to 40 in a 2 hour span because somebody came in and just bet it and then peppered it everywhere. But that's a kid that is a dual threat kid. And think about this. Avery Johnson was so promising when he was coming up as a young quarterback. He made Will Howard transfer to Ohio State.
Yeah.
You know, because yeah. Howard saw Johnson coming and was like, all right, see ya. I'm going to Ohio State. And he wins the national championship. And now he's in the NFL with the Steelers. But the potential is there. I don't know if he's going to have the numbers. I don't know that. But if you're looking for, it doesn't matter if it's Avery Johnson or whoever. How I attack the Heisman market is try and find a guy in that 30 to 60 range that you think the market is wrong on. And hopefully you throw that dart that lands around the bullseye. And that was a name that I heard a couple weeks ago, Avery Johnson, Kansas State. It was bet. It has since moved. But I still think at 35, 40 to 1, there might be some legs there.
Big Ten teams to make the playoff. Last year, obviously, Indiana was a big surprise. I don't believe that's going to happen again. I'll tell you, the team that a lot of people are talking about is Illinois, but I'm sorry, Sam. I don't trust that whole situation that they're going to have that level of a season. Is there someone else that you want to recommend as, you know, not the choice from Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, and Michigan, the top four teams?
I appreciate your apology. You know, I went there, but I don't care. I'm a realist. I bet with my head, not my heart. And I actually wrote about this on Fox a couple of weeks ago because Joel Klatt, who I work with at Fox, was saying that this year's Illinois is last year's Indiana. And I'm thinking, So I'm not in. You know, I know for a fact that Illinois has not won 10 regular season games in over 25 years. So that take that for what it's worth, or almost 25 years, I guess. I don't like a lot of the sleepers in that conference, like Wisconsin maybe, but there's a bet you can make at a couple sports books. Like you can just parlay Oregon to make the playoff and Penn State to make the playoff. I think that's a winner. I mean, you take two favorites, and they're prohibitive favorites, obviously, to make the playoff, but I would be stunned if you don't have Oregon and Penn State in the playoff. So if you have a book that lets you parlay that, a big favorite, fine. Take two of them, hook them together, and bet that, and you cheapen the math. So that's what I would do in the Big Ten. I don't want to give you a sleeper that doesn't make it. So, I mean, look, the big three, obviously, are Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State. Those are the big three. But I'm not there on Illinois, Indiana, Washington, Wisconsin. I really do think two conferences are very top heavy. That's the Big Ten and that's the ACC with Clemson and Miami. There are a lot of bad teams in both the Big Ten and the ACC conferences. It's very top heavy in both leagues.
Alex, let's talk about with Sammy the second half of the baseball season. Really, it's the final, you know, whatever, 59, 60 games here. With some of the notes that you had today, you want to mention a couple of teams and some items and who we could be bullish on in the second half?
There's a market out there that I'm very intrigued by, but I feel like I'm alone. And Sam knows when in the sports betting world, that's okay to be on an island sometimes. But this one really feels like I'm alone. This is the most regular season wins. Now, we know that the Dodgers had a crazy win total to start the year, and now they're even money to have the most regular season wins or the best regular season record here. So I'm curious, Sam, what do you think? You think there's another team that we could jump on that is right there? I mean, the Tigers are 4-1. They've been good all year long. The Astros are 9-1. The Brewers are going on a crazy win run right now. So anyone that you would like in that market?
The problem is, and you know this better than I do, you're chasing the number on any of these teams that aren't the Dodgers, right? I mean, to bet the Tigers at 4-1, the Tigers had a win total of 83.5. So what were the Tigers before the season, right? And same thing with Milwaukee. Milwaukee before the season to have the most wins was probably like 80-1. And now you look at a couple books, DraftKings has like 6-7-1. So I understand when you make this bet, you're not going to get the best of the number, and that's okay. I would go Detroit or Houston. I know you like Houston, but Detroit just plays in such a bad division. And you look at, you know, you got to get through July and then you get through August and September. There's a lot of garbage in the AL Central. I mean, just teams that can't hit, teams that can't pitch. Talk about top heavy. I mean, the AL Central is the definition of top heavy. It's Detroit, and then there's everybody else. It's not that I like Detroit more than I like the Dodgers or the Cubs or the Brewers or the Astros. I just think the AL Central is the weakest division in baseball. So at 4-1, I don't love the math on it, but I think their path to having the most wins is much easier than all those other teams from tougher divisions.
Sammy P is with us from BetSweats. Okay, let's close on this one. Ashton Jeanty, the most high-profile rookie aside from Cam Ward. A quarterback should be more high-profile, but he's been a bit underrated even as a number one pick. Do we have some prop bets that you got on in terms of the Raiders rookie running back in Jeanty?
Yeah, I'm going to wait this out and just bet his under on touchdowns. I think he's going to be one of the most popular players in terms of the touchdown over market, like how many touchdowns will he score this season. I'm gonna wait that thing out. There's no reason to bet that now. As you know, most people bet overs, even though 60% of season unders or season totals go under with props. I think you're going to get a really good price on Jeanty. And I was stunned to hear this. Ashton Jeanty's going like 14th in fantasy drafts right now. Like that's like his average position. If you take all the drafts that are happening right now, fantasy football, he's the 14th player off the board. I don't think the line is there. You guys would know more than I would, but I know Carroll's going to try and run. I just don't know that they can this year in his rookie season.
Sam, we are up against it. We appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
All right, guys. See ya.
Alex, are you with him?
Yeah. I mean, if it gets high enough, if people are betting it over for touchdowns, I think that's not a bad bet to go under. Because they also have Brock Bowers. They have all these other weapons. And yep. I don't think it's just going to be a one-man band here. I think that they're going to spread it out and use everybody they can with Geno.
And they have some other guys in the running back room who scored touchdowns in the past. So yeah. I'm not saying that Jeanty's not going to be a finisher, but if he's not, I don't think Carroll would hesitate to use someone else to finish. It's part of the show is brought to you by our pals at William Hill. Open one of the mobile sports betting accounts. The app is tremendous, as deep a menu as any in this state, over 150 books to sign up at, same game parlay, super parlays, early cash out. Get the information at williamhill.us.